Good morning. Today's daf in Sanhedrin is Lamed Aleph. Yirtzeh Hashem, going to be finishing the third parak of Sanhedrin this morning. We are in Lamed Amud Beis. We are halfway down in the Amud. And the Gemara yesterday introduced us to two machloksim, two very basic machloksim as it relates to Eidus. One is the actual seeing of the event. Does the event have to be seen, or at least, let's say like this. Does the event have to be seen at the same time by the two witnesses? Now, logically, rationally, you'd say, of course. Meaning, if we don't have the two witnesses seeing the same event at the same time, like, what are we even talking about? But what we're talking about is the opinion of Rav Yehoshua Makarcha. And Rav Yehoshua Makarcha says that when it comes to at least a monetary event, I don't know if it extends to criminal cases. I don't think it extends to criminal cases. But at least in a civil event, in a monetary case, if I have witnesses who are reporting that they saw a lone event on two different days, so Rav Yehoshua Makarcha told us that under those circumstances, we'll accept the testimony. Well, let's consider, meaning this is Rav Yehoshua Ben Karcha's argument. Now, you remember yesterday's daf, he either learned it out through a svara or he learned it out from a pasuk. But and then in either event, well, actually matters whether it's a svara or a pasuk, but either way, though, the basic idea of Rav Yehoshua Ben Karcha is, look, let's take what each witness is saying and let's boil it down, let's distill it. What do we have over here? Each witness is saying that Reuven owes Shimon money. And they agreed to the loan amount. So basically, we could take the two testimonies and we can combine them together in order to create testimony. That's the opinion of Rav Yehoshua Ben Karcha. Tanakama disagrees with that. There was a second machlokus between Tanakama and Rabbi Nassan in terms of the actual testimony itself. When the testimony is actually provided in court, does it have to be provided at the same time? Or can it be offered at disparate times? Rabbi Nassan said it could be offered a day apart. And presumably a week apart, a month apart. Meaning the testimony itself does not have to be offered at the same time. And the Tanakama on that also disagrees with Rabbi Nassan. Tanakama says no. When the witnesses come in, they have to come in and give the testimony at the same time. Now, even as the Gemara pointed out yesterday, even according to the Tanakama, doesn't mean they're coming in and saying it in unison. But what it does mean, however, is that they are coming into the court at the same time, and right after another, one right after the other, they have to give their testimony. Okay, on the second issue of the Tanakam and Rabbi Nassan, so we follow like the Rabbi Nassan, which is that the witnesses, when offering the testimony, do not have to offer at the same time. If they offer it at disparate times, that's fine. That's acceptable. On the first machlokas of Yeshua Makarcha and the Chachamim, in terms of seeing the event at the same time, so the Gemara says on that, we are now going to be having a discussion of whether the halacha falls like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha or does not fall like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha. And right now, we're in the middle of the Gemara, where the Gemara says we can maybe have kind of like a middle position over here. So this is where we're going to pick it up, right where we left off yesterday, or right where I left off yesterday. Amar Rav Yosef is found right in the middle of Laman Amud Beis. It is halfway down in the line, halfway down on the page. First word on the line is Ella, and Amar Rav Yosef. So my position is, says Rav Yosef, is that the halacha falls like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha, and whether we're talking about property or whether we're talking about metatlin. Okay, property. Meaning, what would be the case regarding property? So let's say Reuven comes over to one witness on Sunday and says to him, you know, I really do, I'm sitting on the property, but it really belongs to Shimon. And then, a day later, another witness comes forward and says, you know, he made an admission to me on Monday that really, Reuven's sitting on the property, but he admits that it belongs to Shimon. So there, Rav Yosef says, I feel like the halacha is like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha. And in such a case, if we just spent a moment to think about it, really makes perfect sense. Because even though the admission is coming on two different days, but it revolves around the same piece of property. So it's very easy to understand that in such a case, we would be signing like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha. What about metatlin? Metatlin's a little trickier. Now, let's assume for our purposes that metatlin just simply means money. It's a monetary loan. See, that's a little bit trickier. Because metatlin means that one witness is saying that Reuven lent Shimon money on Sunday. The second witness says, well, I saw Reuven lend Shimon money on Monday. Oh. So, all right, that's obviously now, we could make an argument over here that they're not talking about the same loan. But what Rav Yosef is saying is that I think the halacha falls like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha in both of those cases. So, but the Gemara says, but I have heard in the name of Rav that no, that we're going to follow like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha by Karka, for the reasons which I just explained. But we're not going to follow like Rav Yehoshua Makarcha when it comes to two witnesses who are giving disparate days of when the loan actually took place. Now Rav Latamid Amar Rav. So the Gemara says, now Rav is being consistent because Rav also stated, Hoda Acher Hoda, Hoda Acher Hava Mitzarfe. If let's say we have an admission followed by an admission, or an admission followed by followed after the loan, meaning one witness comes in, let's go Hoda Acher Hoda. One witness comes in and says, you know, Sunday he admitted to me that he owes money. And next witness says, Monday, he admitted to me that he owes Monday. That's fine. We'll take those two statements and put them together because the admission could be going on the same loan. Similarly, if one witness says, you know, the loan took place on Sunday, and the second witness says, well, he admitted that he lent money. Again, the two witnesses are describing the same loan. That's fine. However, but if one witness says the loan occurred on Sunday, and the second witness says the loan occurred on Monday, so then Rav says not going to work. That's not going to work because they're not necessarily describing the same loan, and I can't put those witnesses together. Similarly, if one witness says that the loan took place on Monday, and the other witness says that the admission took place on Sunday, again, they're not describing the same loan event. So the Gemara says, but even with this position of Rav, I still don't fully understand. Let's take the example of admission after admission. Look, on Sunday he admitted to one witness that he owes the money. On Monday he admitted to a second witness that he owed the money. But the second witness did not know about the existence of the first witness, necessarily. And certainly, when he admitted to the first witness on Sunday, the first witness on Sunday did not know about the witness coming a day later from now. So in other words, I don't even understand how such a case could work. So the Gemara says, "Da amr le lahai basra bahai mana da odi le kamach odi le nami kami ploni." So the Gemara says, well, the case must therefore be that when admitting to the second witness on Monday, you know, I owed him money, and oh, by the way, I also, you're the second person I'm telling this to. I also admitted this yesterday, so to another witness. So now witness number two knows about witness number one. The Gemara says, but that only solves half of our problem. Akati, basra yada kama, lo yada. So the Gemara says, okay, but witness number one didn't know about witness number two. And how can the two of them testify if they don't know about each other? So the Gemara says, "The Hada Azul Amalei LeKama Haymanad Odi LeKamech Odi LeNami Kami Ploni." So the Gemara says the case must therefore be where he goes back to witness number one and says to him, "You know, the admission that I made to you, I also made to so and so." And now these two people know of each other's existence and know now that they are in fact testifying about the same loan. And under those circumstances, then that's how it works. Amalei Tanuch Tadashi Nachtez Dati. So, in response, he says, oh, okay, good. Now I understand. Good. Thank you. And now I get how an admission after admission, according to Rav, would work. It would only work in a situation where he tells each of the witnesses that he's admitting to about the existence of the other witness. No. Amalei Maini Chusa. So,
why do they have to do that? Because when they appear in court, they appear individually.
Right, right.
So, right. One doesn't know what the other is going to say until after the effect.
Right. But at least now each they know, meaning once the borrower told each one of them and he told about each of the other's existence, so then they now know that they and the other witness are speaking about the same loan. That's how the Gemara now is setting up this halacha of Rav. So Amalei Mani Chusa, the Rav of Item Rav Sheshes Shada Benarga. The Gemara says, you know, either Rav or Rav Sheshes, when they heard this halacha, so immediately they reacted and they threw an axe into this halacha, meaning they basically said, I don't get it. Lav Hainu Hoda Acher Hava. So if this is true, if what you're saying is that the only way Hoda Acher Hoda works is only when the borrower says to each one of them, oh, and I admit it to the other one. So really what we have now is a decent explanation of the halacha, but it's the same point as Hoda Acher Hava. Meaning, let's say there was an admission after a loan. So under those circumstances, we're going to have to say the same thing. That when he admitted to the second witness, he told the second witness about the first witness who actually saw the loan. And then we're also saying that he went back to the first witness who actually saw the loan and he told them about the existence of the second witness. So he says, "Oh, that's funny that you ask." And I'm sorry. And just to clarify, and why would there be a need to now say over both points when it's just now repeating the same point two times over? So Amar Leih Hanu D'Shmei Leih Aleicha. You know, it's funny. That's what I heard about you people. There Amisa Dikla V'Zakfisu Luhu. That you take a palm tree, you plant it, and then what you do is you uproot it. Meaning you try to make everything good, and then you upset it with a question. Okay. Nahardai Amrei. Again, the question, the issue is coming back to the same point. Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha says that witnesses on a monetary case can testify, even if they're not testifying to the same loan event. Now again, there has so far been an opinion that this only applies by karka, that it doesn't apply to a loan. Some say even within a loan, it could apply where it was an admission followed by another admission. Okay, so now the Gemara brings in the opinion of Nahardai. Nahardai Amri ben Odach, Oda ben Odach, Rava ben Havach, Rava ben Havach, Oda mitzdarfos. So the opinion of Nahardai is it will always work. Even though there are the two witnesses are giving disparate times of when either the admission occurred or even when the loan occurred. Meaning even if it's Havach or Havah, which is really the most extreme version of Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha, where one witness says that the loan took place on Sunday, and the second witness said the loan took place on Monday. Again, I know you can make the easy argument that they're not testifying to the same loan event, but again, take that, and I know it's not a minor detail, but take that minor detail away. They're testifying that Reuven owes Shimon money. They're agreeing to the amount that's being owed. So I understand that they're talking about two different days, but still, if you take that detail away, there's agreement between the two, and Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha says, that's fine. We accept that. And the Gemara says, Nahardai, Paskins like Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha, in every version of how we could apply Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha. Kiman ka Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha. And the Gemara says, and that's the conclusion of the Gemara, and that's the halacha. We follow like Nahardai and their understanding of Rav Yishuv Ben Karcha, that on monetary cases, even though they disagree to which day the event happened, but if they agree to the loan and the loan amount, so then they've established that there is in fact a loan. I'm Rav Yehuda. Now, before we start with the next Gemara, just as a brief introduction, we're gonna see this tomorrow in the beginning of the fourth parak, but let's talk about it now, as it's relevant to our discussion right now. When examining a witness, so there basically are you could almost say three levels of questions that we're gonna ask. Okay, level number one, and the most important of the questions are what's called chakiros. Chakiros are basically time and place. When did it happen? Where did it happen? Whatever we're talking about, it's a civil case. It's a capital case. It's right. It's mamonos. It's nefashos. It doesn't matter. We start off with the simple question of chakiros of when and where did it happen. Now these are the most important questions when examining a witness because in order for witnesses to be able to testify, it has to be edus she'ata yochol lahazima. The witnesses have to be open and exposed to hazama. If they're not open and exposed to hazama, it's not going to be testimony. The only way Hazama will work is if a second pair of witnesses say, well, you could not have been there at the time because you were with us at the time. And the only way they can make that argument, the second set of witnesses, is if we know when it happened and we know where it happened. And that way we can have the second set of witnesses come in and say, you weren't there at that time because you were with us at that time. Fine. So the first thing that we ask are when and where. We'll see the Mishnah. The Mishnah actually calls that seven questions. I understand really when you boil it down, it's really two questions. When did it happen and where did it happen? Fine. Then you have what I'll call level number two, and that is bedikos. Now bedikos, I'm dividing into two levels. Level two, level three. My terminology. You don't have to love it. But level two now are bedikos that are really fundamental to the case at hand. Okay? How much money did he lend? Did you lend him? Okay? Some of the most basic information regarding the case itself. Okay. And then there are next level bedika questions, which are, you know, details, but not that important. What color was the wallet when he opened up the wallet to give you the money? Okay. So we have now what we will call chakiros, and we have what's called bedikos. Okay, a basic question. Now, you remember the Gemara we did at the beginning of the Masechta, that when it comes to dinei mamonos, and especially when it comes to loans, so the Chachamim relaxed a lot of the rules. You can make the argument, and the Gemara pretty much says, and again, we're going to see in tomorrow's daf as well, that when it comes to mamonos and when it comes to loans, we're going to dispense with a lot of the examination of the witnesses. Meaning, we want to basically, especially when it comes to loans, we want this to be a streamlined event. We don't want the proceedings to be way too detailed, and we don't want to make it difficult for the malva. We want the malva to get back his money, because we want the malva to lend again. If this turns into a very distasteful event for the malva, he's not going to want to lend again. And the Gemara says time and again that we don't want to be no delos lufnei lovin. We don't want to lock the door. We want lenders to lend. So therefore, it's very possible to make the argument that we won't even ask questions of chakiros to the witnesses in a monetary case. But certainly, you can imagine that bedikos are really important in terms of ascertaining. And so we're going to ask them the most basic questions: how much was the loan amount, et cetera, et cetera. What if in a monetary case there is a discrepancy between the two witnesses on bedikos? Now it's interesting, the Gemara does not discuss what if it's a discrepancy of chakiros. And the Gemara, quite frankly, doesn't discuss whether we're going to be asking the chakira questions. But let's put that aside. I know it's really important. I know it's really basic information. But the Gemara doesn't discuss it. The Rishonim do discuss it. But let's put that aside right now. Let's just right now talk about the bedika questions. Basic questions regarding the loan event. And the witnesses cross each other on these basic questions. Are we going to throw the case out, yes or no? This is what we're addressing right now. I'm Rav Yehuda. So we start off with the statement of Rav Yehuda, and it says, look, if the Edom cross each other on Bedikos questions, so in a case where it's Nefashos, we're throwing the Edom out. But in a monetary case, we're still going to allow the Edom to testify. Now, Amar Rav Misabri Milsa Rav Yehuda Be'echad Amar Rabbanu Kishchar Ve'echad Amar Rabbanu Kilavana. So Rav says, in explanation of Rav Yehuda, let's temper the statement of Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda did say that discrepant bedika answers of the witnesses are going to be allowable, but Rav says, in explanation of Rav Yehuda, but like, let me give you an example. If let's say one witness says that the wallet was black and the other witness says the wallet was white, okay, we'll let that one go. But if one witness says that the money was black and the other one says that the money was white. Now, black money, white money, remember, back then, money was coins. Coins that were old and rusted were considered, they were dark. They were, right, what the Gemara calls black. New money, fresh minted money, is, you know, white, silver, whatever. You can easily see the difference between old money and new money. If one witness says that the money was white and the other one says the money is black, so Rav says, I don't think Rav Yehuda would say in such a case that we will just simply let that slide. And even though it's a monetary case, and even though our tendency is to relax the rules by monetary cases, but this discrepancy is way too outstanding. We're not going to let this slide. Now, so even with Rav's understanding of Rav Yehuda, if one witness says white wallet and the other witness says black wallet, so we're letting that slide. And the Gemara says, as if to say that this is a special halacha when it comes to mamonos. And we would not apply this to the rules of nefashos. The Gemara says, but really? Meaning, we don't apply that to nefashos? Sure we do. V'hama Rav Chista, the Gemara quotes a statement of Rav Chista, which we're going to see later on. It's coming up about a week and a half from now. V'hama Rav Chista, echad amar b'saif hargo, v'echad amar b'ari in hargo, ein zanachon. If it's a capital case and it's a murder, and now the two witnesses are giving us two different descriptions of the murder weapon. One says it was a sword and the other one says it's a spear. Ein ze nachon. Rashi says the Gemara is borrowing the language of the Pasuk. Right? Vihine emes nachon hadavar. So, borrowing the language of the Torah, so Rav Chista says that's no good. Meaning we're throwing the case out. If they can't agree to what the weapon was. The murder weapon. However, but if, let's say, they're arguing about what color shirt the victim was wearing, one says it was black and the other one says it was white, so that's okay. Meaning, certainly we'd be a little bit happier if they could agree, but it's a detail and that's excusable. Now, the color of the shirt of the victim is pretty much the same, it's comparable to the color of the wallet. And what we just learned together now, that Rav Chisda says that in a capital case, it's fine. Meaning, you know, that's an allowable disagreement. So Rav Chisda now, if we take Rav Chisda's statement and we look back at Rav Yehuda, like, Rav Yehuda, what are you talking about? Rav Yehuda, you're telling me that there's a special halacha when it comes to monetary law that will widen the allowance of what is considered a difference of opinion between the two witnesses. What do you mean? According to Rav Chisda, the same thing would be true by nefashos cases. So the Gemara says, Gavra, Gavra, Karamis, we're on the top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. So the Gemara says, Rav Chisda and Rav Yehuda simply don't agree. Meaning, you're asking a question on Rav Yehuda from a statement made by Rav Chisda. They're both Amoraim, and they don't agree with one another. Meaning, Rav Yehuda will tell you that in a murder trial, if the witnesses are not agreeing to the color of the shirt of the victim, we're throwing the witnesses out. Meaning, that's grounds for dismissal. Rav Yehuda just simply doesn't agree with Rav Chisda. We're on the very top of Lamed Aleph, Lamed Aleph. Amrei, Nardai, Amrei, Afilo Echad Omer Mana Shachar, Echad Omer Mana Lavan, Mitzdarfin. Now, Nardai is actually going to go one step further when it comes to Dine Mamnos. If the discrepancy between the two witnesses is even on the money itself, the physical money itself, one witness is saying it's black and the other witness is saying that the money was white, so Nardai says, acceptable, allowable. Kemanki Rav Yishur Ben Karcha. So the Gemara says, Gemara says, you know what? Now, and now you understand why we're discussing this right here, right now. Gemara says, you know, that must be going like Rav Yishur Ben Karcha. And the Gemara says, think about it. Rav Yishur Ben Karcha says, if one witness says the lone event took place on Sunday, and the other one says the lone event took place on Monday, Rav Yishur Ben Karcha says, we'll let that slide. Oh, so the Gemara now thinks that's really no different than one witness saying the money was black and the other one saying the money was white. The Gemara says, I don't know if that's an acceptable leap. The Gemara says, "Ema d'shamas le Rav Yishur Ben Karcha hecha de la mechashu adadei." Gemara says, "Yeah, you know, in Rav Yishur Ben Karcha's case, of the witnesses where one reported the loan taking place on Sunday and the other one says Monday, they're not contradicting one another." Now, again, I know as the words are coming out of my mouth, I know that that's not perfectly accurate. They are disagreeing with one another, but it's not like black and white. Black and white are literally the opposites of one another. Right, Sunday, Monday, I know, I understand it's a discrepancy. But again, look at what they're agreeing to. They're agreeing to a loan, they're agreeing to a loan amount, they're agreeing to the parties involved. Okay, I understand the day is not insignificant. The day is significant. Okay, but one said Sunday, the other said Monday. But as opposed to over here, where we're talking about the color of the money, where one says it's freshly new minted money, the other one says no, it was old rusty money. So the Gemara says, I think that's too far a leap. That's hachasha. They're literally contradicting one another. So, I don't think Rav Yishur Ben Karcha would agree in this case, that where one witness says it's black and the other one says it's white, it's acceptable. Elohu damar ki aitana. So the Gemara says, okay. So you don't want to say Nardai falls like Rav Yishur Ben Karcha. That's fine. I'm ready to buy that. But the Gemara says, but I will tell you this, though. We're going to learn a braisa together, and we're going to see the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, and after having learned the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, so now Nardai can hang their halacha on the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Let's learn it together. I'm Rav Shimon ben Elazar. L'nechlus g'beisham e'beisol al shtei kite edim shachas omeres masayim v'achas omeres mana. Sheyesh b'chla masayim mana. Beisham and Beisola are arguing, but first let's talk about where they agree. They agree in the following scenario. You have two sets of witnesses. One set of witnesses says that the loan amount was 200, and the other set of witnesses say the loan amount was 100. Now, obviously, they disagree. But there is a common denominator, right? Going back to our sixth grade math, there's a lowest common denominator, meaning they both agree that there was a $100 loan amount. It just happens to be that the second group tacked on another 100. But at least there's a common denominator, and they will now both agree that we will accept their testimony at least for the 100. Now, Alma Nechlaku, so Beisham and Beisola would agree in that case, but here's where they're going to disagree. Al-Kasachat, where there's one group, meaning just two witnesses, Al-Kasachat, and one of the witnesses say that the loan amount was 100, and the second witness says that the loan amount was 200. So now, as opposed to the previous case where I had a full set of witnesses say that the loan amount was 100, here, I only have two witnesses and they're not agreeing to the amount. Beishami armim nechliku edusam. So Beishami says we're going to have to throw the testimony out because there's disagreement about what the loan amount is. Ubeisola armim yesh b'chla masayim mana. And Beisola says no. Beisola says we're not throwing out the testimony. We're accepting their testimony at least for the lowest common denominator of 100. So, before we go on, let's pause over here. And now, basically, what did we just learn together? That despite the fact that there's a discrepancy between, it's just two witnesses, and despite the fact that one said 100 and the other says 200, but at least there's a common denominator, and because there's a common denominator, so we're ready to accept that there is an obligation of $100.
Same loan or two different
loans? No, same. Now, how can one say there was 200 and the other one say 100? It's exactly the point of the Gemara. Meaning there is a discrepancy, but there is a common denominator. Now that we've learned the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Elazar, so now we're going to reintroduce Nahardai, the sheet of Nahardai, and attach it to this position. Meaning, what did Nahardai say? That one witness says the money was black and the other one says the money was white. Okay, that's a discrepancy. But again, let's look at the common denominator. Do we agree on who the lender and borrower is? Yes. Do we agree in terms of what the loan amount is? Once again, yes. So in other words, there's so many points of agreement. Granted, one is saying the money was black and the other is saying the money was white, but we can ignore that because look at the point of agreements. Okay. So the Gemara says, and that's what Nahardai is basing their position on, the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Obviously, we're following Beis Hillel over here. Now, Echonomer Chavish Olyam v'Echonomer Chavish Ol Shemen. Gemara is going to give a number of more cases of discrepancy and what is acceptable, what's an allowable discrepancy in monetary cases. One says that what was given from Reuven to Shimon was oil, and the other one says that what was given from Reuven to Shimon was not oil, but rather wine. So now the disagreement is the actual liquid that was handed over. So Hava Uvde Vasa Lekamed Rabbi Ami, Chayve Rabbi Ami L'Shlom Alei Chavita Dechamer Migo Chavita Demashcha. So the case is brought into the court of Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami says, look, oil is more expensive than wine, right? We've gone over this point a number of times, right? And by the way, it's true. Meaning, you go to the supermarket, right? Olive oil is more expensive than wine. So, right, per liter. So the, I understand you could buy expensive wine, but, okay, on the average. So what Rabbi Ami says is, well, look, right, even though I know they're disagreeing to what the actual liquid was, but take the lower value liquid and at least they agreed to that amount, so I haven't paid that amount.
Is it a value or the volume?
So the Gemara says, good question, the Gemara is going to clarify that point right now. So Kamanka, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second, Rabbi Ami's ruling over here is based on what? You want to tell me it's based on Rav Shimon ben Elazar? Amadama Rav Shimon ben Elazar Hechad Yesh Bechla Masai Mana. Gemara says, wait 1 second. That's when it comes to a loan and money. Meaning, if you are lending $200 and the other one says, no, it was $100, at least we can make the argument that $200 is composed of two $100 bills. And at least there we could talk about a common denominator. But Ki Aigavna Mi Amar. But over here, oil and wine are two different liquids. There's no oil within wine or wine within oil. So if we're talking about value, okay, I can understand. But if we're talking about the actual liquid itself, I don't even think Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar would agree that this is an allowable discrepancy. So lo tricha lidame. So the Gemara says we're not talking about the liquid, we're talking about the value of the liquid. Meaning that the disagreement was not for the actual liquid itself, but they were arguing about, you know, he gave him the value of a liter of wine. And the other one says, no, he gave him the value of a liter of oil. Okay. So the Gemara says, now we understand the ruling of Rabbi Ami. In a monetary case, we are agreeing to the parties involved, the loan amount, we're even agreeing to the day. One witness says it took place on the first floor, and the other one says it took place on the second floor. The question came in front of Rabbi, and Rabbi says we can put their testimonies together. Now, I mentioned the beginning of the shiur today that we have just learned together that when it comes to monetary law, when it comes to dinim mamonos, so we are allowing for a greater discrepancy when it comes to bedikos, when it comes to, you know, non-essential and even bordering on essential questions regarding the case. I mentioned in the beginning, the Gemara doesn't utter a word about chakiros, meaning when did it happen, where did it happen. Our Gemara over here, the last little bit of Gemara over here, at least touches on the issue of place. Now, it sounds like from the Gemara over here that even if there's a discrepancy in Chakira, meaning where did it happen, Rebbe said that's allowable. But to be fair and to be honest, we're talking about a one-floor discrepancy. So, right, it's not perfectly clear if, let's say, there was a discrepancy in location, meaning one says that the loan event took place here in Boca, and the other one says, no, it took place in Hollywood. That's a lot different than arguing about which floor on the building it took place. So, admittedly, the Gemara just taught us that. If it's a one-floor discrepancy, Rebbe was fine with that when it comes to Dine Mamanos, but I don't know how far you can extend that. Okay, so, just... It's really, in other words, from the Gemara's conclusion, we all certainly get the idea that a wider allowance for discrepancy on Dine Mamnos, that idea we certainly have conveyed, all the way to the point of even a discrepancy of where, but to how far we're going to say the discrepancy is going to take us, unclear. Finally, the last parts of the Mishnah. The Gemara is going to now quote a Braisa. We really already expressed this idea back in the Mishnah. When the judges leave the courtroom, and the judges had deliberation. Remember yesterday we talked about, and 2 days ago we talked about, that there was a moment where the Gemara talked about having open deliberation, but it seems like the Gemara rejected that. The Gemara talked about a closed door deliberation, where the witnesses themselves and the litigants themselves are not listening in on the deliberation. But let's assume that, and let's assume that the litigants themselves don't know which judge sided with whom. The Mishnah taught us, and we're going to see it right now in the Braisa again, when the judges leave that court that day, nobody's to say anything. Meaning there should be no disclosure of which judge ruled in which position. Every judge should keep his mouth closed afterwards. Tana Rabbanan minan lechashiyetz lo yama harinim mezakev v'chaver mechayven ava ma eseh shechaver rabu alai. Right, no judge should be going over to the litigant afterwards saying, "Look, a tough break, and you know I was in your corner and I was fighting for you, but you know those other two judges. What am I supposed to do?" So no judge should be saying that. So the Gemara quotes, the Braisa here quotes Psukim. Same Psukim we saw back in the Mishnah. Lo selech rachel ba'amecha, ve'omer holech rachel megala sod. Okay, you're right. It falls under the category of lashon hara to disseminate that kind of information. And the Gemara just concludes with one last story. Ha'ut amudah denafik ala kala degala milsa de'idmar be'medrash ha'basar esem v'tartin shnin. There was a student who, after 22 years, revealed a secret in the Beis Medrash. The Gemara does not tell us what the secret was. Obviously, that's not important for us to know. That's not the point. The point is, he revealed something that should not have been revealed. And even though it was 22 years later, there is no statute of limitations when it comes to Lashon Hara. And even though 22 years later he revealed the secret, Afke Rav Ami may be Medrasha, Amar Dain Gali Razia. Rabbi Ami picked him up, threw him out of the Beis Medrash, and he says he's a revealer of secrets, not acceptable, and threw him out of the Beis Medrash 22 years. I heard, I, you'll forgive me, I don't have a source, but I heard what was the significance of 22 years. One of the first secrets in the Torah was kept for 22 years, and that is the Yosef. What happened to Yosef? Right, and you remember the brothers? You know, the brothers sold him. I'm sure you heard. So the right. It's been reported. Okay, and then a cherem was made, and the brothers placed a cherem on anyone who discloses this information. Meaning, this is to be kept a secret. And how long was that secret kept for? 22 years, exactly 22 years. But to be fair, though, who revealed the secret? Yosef himself. Okay, so I guess he wasn't part of the band. and he did, and it was his father. So, like, it'd be a little bit odd if he didn't tell his father, you know, I'm Yosef. Okay, anyway, we continue the next Mishnah. Kozman may be right, so sir Sadin. Okay, the case has come to a conclusion. The basin came out with a verdict, and it's over, right? So that's what we're going to be dealing with from this Mishnah. This is the last Mishnah in the third parak until the end of the parak. And the Mishnah is about to teach us, not necessarily, the case is not necessarily over. If further evidence can be procured, even though it's after the verdict has been issued, So we're going to reopen the case. So Amalo Karaishesh Lecha Havemi Kana Shoshim Yom. Now, I'm sorry, even before I start with this next line of the Mishnah, meaning that basically we're not going to, even though Basin came out with a ruling, and remember, often is a time where the Gemara says we do not like taking taking the authority away from a Beis Din. Meaning when a Beis Din issues a ruling, we want to support a Beis Din and the ruling. That's on one hand. On the other hand, evidence comes out, new evidence that comes out that can favor a litigant. So we don't want it, we also don't want to hurt the litigant as well. So basically the idea behind the Mishnah is that if it's understandable how this new evidence come out and he didn't know about it beforehand, we're going to reopen the case. And we're going to redo the case. And we don't like doing this to Beis Din, right? The Gemara says a number of places, right? We don't like taking away the power of Beis Din, but at the same time, we have to respect and honor new evidence.
Same Beis Din.
Huh? Could be the same Beis Din, could be a different Beis Din. Meaning, but, right, but in other words, we have to, he has brought now new evidence. So now, Amarlo, now I'm going on to the next line of the Mishnah. Amarlo Karaishi Yishlacha Havei Mikana Shoshim. Now let's say Beis Din puts out a due date and says to the litigant, okay, look, we want this to come to a conclusion. We're going to give you 30 days to bring whatever witness, whatever testimony, whatever evidence you have. So, the Tanna Kamma says, once Beis Din has issued a due date, so the Tanna Kamma says we have to honor the due date. If he brings in evidence within 30 days, great. And if not, and it's after 30 days, it's unfortunate, but the Beis Din did come out with a due date. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Maya says, Eshla Matza Besoch Shoshim, Amatza Lacher Shoshim. So, Shimon Gamliel says, I don't care that Beis Din made a due date. Look, if he happens to be that he discovered evidence 31 days later, poor guy. Meaning, he didn't know about it. So, and now you're going to punish him because he didn't know about it? So, Shimon Gamliel says, even though Beis Din came out with a due date, if he discovers new evidence after the due date, the case can be reopened. Now, contrast that with the next case of the Mishnah. Amar lo havei edim v'amar ein li edim. Amar havei raya v'amar ein li raya. Now, when asked a pointed question, do you, the litigant, have any more witnesses? He says no. Do you, the witness, have any more evidence? And he says no. Well, achar zman hevi raya. And then afterwards, so somehow, he conjures up more evidence. After he himself says, I have no more. U'matza edim harei ze eino klum. After he says, I got nothing, so then there, he can no longer produce any more evidence or any more witnesses. I'm Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Maya says, Eshlo haya yodei sheishlo edim, umatza edim. Lo haya yodei sheishlo raya, umatza raya. And again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel sympathetic towards the litigant. Now, I know he said he didn't have more, but he thought he didn't have more. But what are you supposed to do? Poor guy, all of a sudden he learns about new witnesses that he didn't know about. Give the guy a break. Okay, so there are two different cases in the Mishnah. The first case in the Mishnah is where Beis Din imposes a due date. Tanna Kamma says we have to honor Rav Shimon Gamliel says no, we don't. In the second case of the Mishnah, the litigant himself says he's got nothing more. Tanna Kamma says that okay, case closed, and we're not reopening it. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says no, we're going to reopen it. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to be very clear who we side with in both of these cases. Last point of the Mishnah. Rashi mischayev b'din. The litigant sees that the case is not going in his way, in his direction. There are certain telltale signs in the case themselves, which are clearly indicating that, wow, I didn't know he had all that evidence against me. Oh boy. And so, as the case is now coming to an end, and as he sees that he's losing, Amar, kirvu ploni ploni v'yaduni. He says, oh wait one second. Right, like a classic Perry Mason. I got mystery witnesses. I know I didn't mention this in the beginning of the case, but wait one second. I got some witnesses over here. Come guys. Or he reaches into his coat pocket and he takes out a piece of paper, which, you know, why didn't he bring it out in the beginning of the case? It's curious, and I'm being nice when I say it's curious. So hareza enuklum. So here, there's no debate. Rav Shimon Gamliel doesn't even voice dissent on this position. We understand now. The context is screaming. These witnesses are probably fraudulent. That piece of paper that he took out of his pocket, probably fraudulent. And so it's like this last line of the Mishnah is like common sense 101. Like,
And then if the third case is like that,
then
the second case after,
right, Right, right. Okay. And so the only thing I could tell you is that you'll be happy where the Gemara concludes on all these issues. Okay. Amar Abba Bar Rehun Alach Gershem and Gamliel. So we are now in case number one of the Mishnah, where Beis Din imposes a due date. So the Tanakhama says it has to be honored. Rehun and Gamliel says no, it does not have to be honored. So on this first case, the Gemara passes like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. The Amar Rav Huna and Alacha Kedivrei Chachamim, and the Alacha does not follow like the Chachamim. And the obvious question the Gemara asks Pshita: Kevin the Amar Alacha Rav Shimon Gamliel Meimele Yadanadi and Alacha Kachachamim. Well, once you know the Alacha is Rav Shimon Gamliel, don't I also know the Alacha is not like the Chachamim? No, Ma'ad Detema Ani Melechatchila Val Diavet Shapi Dami Kamash Malan Diavet Ma'ajin Alei. The Gemara says no. The reason why we have to reinforce this point is because I might have thought, yes, we should follow like Rosh Hashanah and Gamaliel, but if a Beis Din passes like the Chachamim, is that really so bad? The answer is yes. Meaning the halacha is absolutely like Rosh Hashanah and Gamaliel, that if Beis Din imposes a due date, the due date does not have to be honored. Okay. Now, we are on the second case of the Mishnah where, point blank, we ask the litigant, are you done? You got any more evidence? And he says, no, I don't. So here now, the Gemara is going to be discussing who the halacha falls like. Amarlo, right, again, the Tanakhama says, case is closed. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says it can be reopened. Amar Rabba Baravuna, Amar Rav Yochanan, Alachi Divrei Chachamim, Amar Rabba Baravuna, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ein Alachi Ker Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So here Rav Yochanan tells us, the halacha is like the Chachamim. Where if the litigant says, I'm done, he's done. The case is not to be reopened. No new evidence can be reintroduced into the case. And the Gemara says, Pshita. Now, once you tell me the halacha is like the Chachamim, don't I know the halacha is not like Rav Shimon Gamliel? Now, when the Gemara asked this question just a moment ago, the Gemara said, yeah, well, I might have thought that Lichatchila versus Bidiyevin. Rashi points out over here, we're not going to say that over here. And the reason why it says Rashi is because, let's consider, we have a machlokis here between the Chachamim and Rav Shimon Gamliel. And we just, in the second case, where the litigant himself says, I got no more, we're passing like the Chachamim. So over here, once we're saying the halacha is like the Chachamim, meaning it's Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, it's a das yachid, I'm not even entertaining the idea that maybe b'diavad we can go like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. No. Once we're passing like the Chachamim, that's it. The Chachamim is the Rabbim. So that means that we wouldn't even have thought that even b'diavad we should be going like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So then why do I have to then reject Rav Shimon ben Gamliel? Kev damar lachi divrei chachamim meimele yadan, dein halachi Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Ha'akamash malan debai, he ain't halachi Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Ha'bekulu halacha ke Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So the Gemara says, actually, we're saying something monumental, which is that in our Mishnah, we're rejecting the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. You go to any other Mishnah in Shas, and you see the opinion of Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, and that's to be followed. Meaning what Rav Yochanan is telling us is that I subscribe to Rav Shimon Gamliel throughout the entirety of the rest of Shas. Okay, that's a big deal. La'afuke mehada amar Rabba Barachana amar Rav Yochanan. Now the Gemara says there's another version of Rav Yochanan which almost agrees with this, but slightly different. And that is called Makam Shoshana Rav Shimon Gamliel b'mishnasin halacha kamoso. Anytime you see Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, we follow that halacha with three exceptions. Chutz me'ar v'tzidon v'raya achrona. Except for the cases of arev, tzidon, and raya achrona. Raya achrona is what we're discussing right now. Meaning where the litigant says, I got no more information, I got no more evidence, I got no more witnesses. So Rav Shimon Gamliel says, we can reopen the case, and then this we reject Rav Shimon Gamliel. In this version of Rav Yochanan, there are two other places in Mishnah Shas where we also are rejecting the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. One is Arev, that was the end of Baba Basra, where Rav Shimon Gamliel talked about where the Arev stands in line in terms of being able to collect from the Arev. And Sidon is the case in Gittin where he gives a get to a woman, but only on the condition that she gives him back his coat. And she can't find it, and can she pay the value of the coat in terms of satisfying the condition. Okay, that was the Gemara in Gittin. But two other places. Okay, meaning it's a small discrepancy. The idea is essentially the same. Rav Yochanan almost always sides with Rav Shimon Gamliel with exception. It's just a question of what the exceptions are. We all agree our Mishnah is one exception, where we don't pass like Rav Shimon Gamliel. And then a question of, are there two other places where we don't pass like Rav Shimon Gamliel? Ha'u yenuka detavu ledina kami de Rav Nachman. There was an orphan that was brought to court in front of Rav Nachman. And in other words, there was a lender, and the kid inherited as part of the estate an account payable, and now the kid was taken to court. Now, Let's just pause for a moment before we go on to the Gemara.
Yeah.
You're right. Normally, we don't take kids to court. And especially orphans, meaning, generally speaking, we are extraordinarily sympathetic to the plight of an orphan. And even though, meaning the lender is owed his money, meaning that part's, you know.
There's no apotropis.
And even with an apotropis, we're not going to take a kid to court. We're basically going to tell the lender, generally speaking, you wait, let the kid grow up, and then go to court. So it is
13 or 20.
We had that discussion before. By properties, it's 20. So over here, it is an oddity. Making an observation. It's an oddity that right now the kid's being taken to court. Tosos addresses this. Could be, says Tosos, that Rav Nachman just simply disagrees. Okay. Anyway, without getting too far, without diving too far deep into this hole, I'm just raising awareness that it is curious that the kid's being taken to court, but he is. Okay. How you nuka the tavul adina coming to Rav Nachman Amalei Islech Sahade? So Amalei Lo. So you have any witnesses? The kid says no. Islech Raya. You have any evidence? And Amalei Lo. And the kid says no. So Chayver Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says okay. Case over. And he awards the money to the lender. So havakabachiv azel. So the kid comes out of the court and he's crying, and all this is perfectly understandable. It's a kid. So shamu hanach inche. So now, as the kid comes out of the court and you know he's crying, so word spreads and people hear about this, and now the witnesses are coming out of the woodwork. So amar le ana yadana b'mila davucha. So one guy says, or let's say a couple guys say, hey, you know what? Right, we know what happened. Meaning, oh, okay, fine. And so now, even though the kid himself admitted, no, I got nothing more, so now, but witnesses are coming out. So Rav Nachman says, and again, this is intuitive, but Rav Nachman is now saying it, and that is, we're going to reopen this case. Now, even though we just rejected the opinion of Shimon Gamliel, that when the litigant says, I got nothing more, but this is obviously different. Meaning, it's not the kid's loan. The kid inherited the loan from his father. What does he know from his father's affairs? And so even though the kid said, I got no more evidence, understandably, when he said, I got no more evidence, he doesn't know what he's talking about. And if there are witnesses that are coming out, we're just going to simply reopen the case. Okay. Gemara tells another story. Now, this next story is not really related to our discussion, but it involves the courtroom of Rav Nachman. And so the Gemara puts the story in over here. Ha'isa says, the nafik shar metusa yadam. A woman is holding a loan document, but she's not the lender. She's a third party. The lender asked her to hold on to it. Okay. And Amar Le Yadana Behaishtar De Priyahava. Now she comes in the courtroom holding the document. And she says, look, it's a loan document, but I'm holding it, and I'm telling you that I know that it's a paid document. Now, she's one, and generally speaking, we don't accept the testimony of a woman in court. But here Rav Nachman, at least in the first version of the story, Rav Nachman believes her. Heimnua Rav Nachman. So Rav Nachman says, okay, she's credible. So Amalei Rav Rav Nachman, come on. Karebi Damar Osios Niknos Memesira. So Rav is there in the courtroom and he's trying to understand Rav Nachman. What? Why are you believing her? Oh, is it because you subscribe to Ramir's viewpoint? Now remember, we discussed this back in Baba Basra. Rav Nachman said, sorry, Rabbi Meir said back in Baba Basra, once again, I'll correct myself. Rebbe said, back in Baba Basra, Osios Niknos Memesira, that when it comes to paper, meaning a loan document, so by me handing it over to somebody else, Kenyan, done. He now is the owner of that paper. Right? In other words, you buy and sell paper, and you don't have to write another contract on the sale of the paper, meaning just simply handing the paper itself creates a Kenyan. Oh, so when Rav is trying to understand Rav Nachman, he says, oh, I see. So you're subscribing to Rebbe, right? That's what you're doing? Meaning, and this is Rashi's explanation, meaning, and so therefore you're viewing the woman as basically the owner of the paper. Oh, so she's not actually testifying about the paper, meaning she now being the holder of the paper is the de facto owner of the paper, and that's why she's basically saying, yeah, paid. Amale shani hachadi by kalte. So the Gemara says, so Rav Nachman says, no, not necessarily. No. Meaning I don't have to subscribe to Rebbe's viewpoint, but I'll still believe her. Why? Because she has a powerful argument where she didn't have to hold on to the paper anymore. She could have burned it. And so therefore she has what we call an halacha migu. and therefore she's going to be believed based on the credibility of based on the power of Migu. That is version number one of the story. The Gemara tells us version number two of the story. In version number two, Reb Nachman did not believe her. When she's holding on, she's a third party holding on to the loan document, and she says it was paid, and Reb Nachman says, okay, but not credible. So Amalei Rav L'Rav Nachman V'ha'i Baye. We're on the top of Lamed Aleph Amud Beis. So Rav says to Rav Nachman, yeah, but doesn't she have a Migu? She could have said that the document was burnt.
It was mine. Said it was mine.
Owes me. Yeah, but her name. Is not on the document.
I transferred the loan.
Okay, but if right, so that's what the Gemara said previously. If we hold like Rabbi, yeah. So that's valid. But if you don't hold like Rabbi, that's not going to work. So Kevin is.
I'm sorry. Shouldn't the lender that's claiming have the shtar to show that it's a loan?
Yeah. In other words, if the lender was holding the shtar, that'd be great. But he's not holding the shtar. So she's holding the shtar.
I understand, but that's it.
They're
finished. So why are we discussing this?
But the star's still out there. It's still in existence.
My star is ignited in the land of Denver.
Okay, but it's there. But it's there. Right? I'm holding a check. Even and now, I understand the checks nowadays are, you know, you write the beneficiary on the check itself. But in other words, if it's validated, I can deposit the check. So okay, the note's outstanding. So again, she's saying it's paid, and version number two of Rav Nachman says, I don't believe her.
You could sell a mortgage.
You could sell paper. But again, she doesn't have. If you subscribe to Rebbe's viewpoint, so then that's fine. And that's why Rav Nachman in the first version, you know, said, fine, I'll believe her. But now in the second version where he doesn't believe her, so meaning that it's still going to be an outstanding note and needing to be paid, so Rava says, but wait one second, she has a migu. So the Gemara, so Rav Nachman's response is, Kevin Dizchazik Bebedina, Ibai Kaalte Lo Amrina. So the way Rashi presents the Gemara, Tosfos disagrees, but I'm going to present the Gemara like Rashi. The way Rashi presents the Gemara, This loan document was already notarized. It already has a henpeck on it. And Rashi says, now that it has a henpeck on it, we view it as if it is a court document, and a migu is not going to be able to upend a court document. Okay. Eitzvei Rav L'Rav Nachman. Now, in the second version of the story, Rav Nachman did not believe her. Rav says to Rav Nachman, what about the following brisa? Simpon sheyesh alav eidim yiskayim b'chosmav. If I have a receipt and witnesses signed on the receipt, so you notarize it and you're good. Ein alav eidim v'yatza mitach zedeishlesh. Now let's say there are no witnesses, but it's being held by a third party. O sheyatza achar chitim shtaros. Or let's say it's an addendum to the actual loan document itself. Under those circumstances, kosher. Meaning, as long as the third party says that this is a good and valid receipt, we're going to believe the third party. So Rava says to Rav Nachman, you see this brisa? Clearly the brisa is empowering the third party to validate a document. So Amash Lish Mehemen, to Yufta de Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's a very powerful brisa, and it's not supporting at least the second version of Rav Nachman. Now, in the first version, Rav Nachman believed her. So obviously the brisa would be supportive according to the first version, but not the second version. Continuing in the Gemara. Now, the Gemara quotes in the Rav Dimi, in the name of Rav Yochanan, that once the litigant says, I have no more evidence, it's over, but then, if he says, bring out some more witnesses, he can do so. And the Gemara says, well, you just confused me. Hagufa kasha. Amar yisatin tano sav asan l'rabanan. V'hada amar kivu ish ploni v'aduni asan l'rashim and gamliel. Well, which way are you going? Are you going like the Chachamim, or are you going like Rishon and Gamliel? V'chitim akula Rishon and Gamliel perushaka mefareish. And maybe really the whole statement is subscribing to Rishon and Gamliel. And maybe it's just simply a lengthy sentence. And the Gemara goes on to explain. The Gemara says, and maybe it's all Rav Shimon Gamliel. Where even if he says, I got no more information, but then he trots out more witnesses afterwards, will allow it? The Gemara says, but you know we won't. Right, we just got done learning on the Amud Aleph of today's daf that Rav Yochanan does not agree or does not subscribe to Rav Shimon Gamliel when the litigant himself says, I got no more evidence. So Alek Yehad Rav Shmuel Rav Yehuda I'm Rav Yochanan. So the Gemara says we're going to have to go with not Rav Dimi's version of Rav Yochanan, but rather Rav Shmuel's version of Rav Yochanan, which is the following. Once he says, I got no more witnesses, I got no more evidence, the case is closed and he cannot reintroduce new evidence. However, even within the psak of Rav Yochanan, who rejects Rav Shimon Gamliel, there's still going to be extenuating circumstances. The Gemara gives two examples. One, witnesses come from overseas. So that's an extenuating circumstance. We'll reopen the case. Two, let's say paperwork was found in somebody else's vault. Again, extenuating circumstance, and we'll reopen the case over there. But if the litigant himself is procuring the new witnesses and the new evidence after he himself admitted he doesn't have any more, we don't reopen the case. There's a debate between the two litigants of where to go to court. One says locally, and the other one says, no, let's go to the Beis Avad. Beis Avad, Rashi explains, as being a place where you have a collection of Talmidei Chachamim. It's, I guess we could describe it as being, so to say, a better court. So here, the way Rav Yochanan's position is first presented to us, We can force the other litigant to go to the Beis Avad. It's a better court. I'm the fund of Rabbi Lazar. Rabbi Misha Noshe Bechaver Mana Yose Mana Amana. So Rabbi Lazar says, wait one second. No, I don't get it. The lender lent money, and now in order to recoup his money that he lent out, you expect him now to pay expenses in order to get back money? Meaning, if the loan amount was 100, he's going to have to pay the travel expenses of $100 in order to be able to collect back his $100. Rabbi Lazar says, no. El Kofanos of Adam Biro. No. We're going to try the case locally. It Marnami Amar of Safra, Shnaim Shinisatma Bedin, Echonomar Nidon Kamba Echonomar Nechla Makam Avad, Kofanos of Adam Biro. You have a debate between the litigants where to go to court. And one says we're going to try the case over here. Now, if Basin over here gets stuck on a halachic issue, which they don't know where to go, so they'll send a letter over to a larger basin, a greater basin, and they'll get back the information. Now, if one of the litigants is demanding an explanation, he's entitled. And you write the explanation out for him. Now, in a case of Yavam Yavama, where they're going to do chalitza, so who has home court advantage? The husband. The husband meaning the Yavam. Ad kama amir Rabbi Amar afil mitver letzipori. Even if that means the Yavam has to go from Tver to Tzipori, which quite frankly is not that long a trip, right? Tzipori is modern day Hoshaya. It's about by car. It's about 15 minutes outside of Tveria. But anyway, they didn't have cars back then. Okay, good point by me. So I'm Rav Kahana Maikra. V'kar lo ziknei iro v'lo ziknei ira. And the pasuk speaks out to the idea that in the case of chalitza, the yavam is considered the home court. Okay, Amar Amemar Hilchza Kofenosav v'yelach l'makam avad. Now Amemar says the halacha is that given the choice of either judging the case locally or going to the Beis Avad, so Amemar says we're going to go to the Beis Avad if one of the litigants wants to go to the Beis Avad. So Amalei Rav Ashkel Amemar v'Amar Rav Elazar Kofenosav v'dam biro. That goes against what we just learned together, but in the name of Rabbi Lazar, which is we're not going to the Beis Avad. We're going to judge the case locally. So the Gemara says even the opinion of Rabbi Lazar, where we're forcing one of the litigants to judge the case locally, that's only if the Malva is insisting that we're going to judge the case locally. But if the Malva wants to go to the Beis Avad, we're going to go to the Beis Avad. And why? The Pasuk Mishlei, which we quoted already a number of times in our parak. And that is, in the relationship between a Lov and a Malva, Malva's in the driver's seat, Lov is not in the driver's seat. The Pasuk Mishlei actually says it much, much harsher than the way I said it. Right? Eved Lov Elish Malva. All right? The Lov is a slave to the Malva. In other words, look, the Malva extended himself to the Lov, and as a result of that, the malveh is given certain courtesies. One of the courtesies is that if the malveh is insistent that the case is to be tried locally, we're trying the case locally. If the malveh wants to go to the Beis Avad, we'll go to the Beis Avad. Shachal el Mar Ukva. The following letter was sent to Mar Ukva. Lizayele kabar bisya. Right? Lidizivle kabar bisya. You're radiant like the son of Bisya. Bisya, of course, is Bas Paro, right? So basically, you radiate like Moshe Rabbeinu. So a nice way to introduce, you know. So it sounds like a wonderful compliment. Shalom Ukva Habavli Kibba Karmani Yirmiya Achi Hevi Elias Aderech VaAmrlo Hisiu VeYire Penenu Betveria. And basically, we'd like to try the case in Tveria. Now Hagufa Kasha Amart Amrulo Ama Dainua Ason. So the Gemara says, now the note was a little bit confusing. Because first the note opened up by saying, you judge him. And then he see over Yeru Penina Betveria. And then an invitation to come to Tveria. So Alma Shadrua Hacha, which means basically send him over here to Israel and have him tried here in Eretz Yisrael. El Hachi Kamre. So the Gemara says, so discrepancy in terms of whether or not the case should be tried out in Bavos, the case should be tried in Eretz Yisrael. Amrle Dainu Asun. Itzai Sais V'yelo Yisu V'yeru Penina Betveria. So one way to explain the letter was basically like this. If you know that they're going to listen to you with your and you're ruling over there, so then rule them out there. But if you don't think they're going to listen to your ruling, they're not going to honor your ruling, so send them here to Tveri and we'll try them over here. Another possibility, says the Gemara, is Rav Ashi Amar Dina Kanasas Hava, that this was not a simple monetary case, but it was punitive. It had some sort of kanas that was involved. Ubebaba lo dina dina kanasas. And as we learned earlier, we don't try punitive cases in Bavel. They don't have smicha in Bavel. You can't try, excuse me, you can only try loans in Bavel, but you can't do kanasas. And the fact that he said, you know, right, you radiate like Moshe Rabbeinu, you want to try him, that's okay. Meaning he was just saying that to be nice and courteous. Kedei lach lo kava lamar ukva. Right, to extend cover to Mar Ukva. But the truth be told is that it was a knas, it was a case of knas, could not be tried in Bavel, and it was just a formality. But basically what he's saying is, if the case is going to be tried, it has to be tried here in Eretz Yisrael. Hajjalach Zebara, that is the end of the third parak of the Masechta. Tomorrow, God willing, we start the fourth parak.